Hello, Tudor-minded people. It's Philadelphia Carrie for Tudor Time Machine. The word I share with you this week is noddy. Dear friends, I must tell you a truth. And that truth is sometimes it is best to love from afar. To imagine the embrace, the garden walks, the sweet murmurs, disporting freely. When presented with the man in the flesh, 'tis a bit of a misery. For, as I have said, the time I spent with R.B. is lacking, and yet I must smile and fawn as if he were a king or a duke. Gentles, with a king or a duke, the position acquired is worth the pain. Oh, unless, of course, one is beheaded, but that is far out of the ordinary. But I do bethink me, 'tis not worth suffering on behalf of an actor, of a player of kings and dukes. I thought to be taken down a path covered in roses, but alas, it was covered in brambles, boring tales, and small farts. R.B. has little time to be my kicky-wicky, for he must always be about the theatre, and his mind runs ever on his parts or on profits. Oh, pitikins! R.B. speaks to me of receipts. Why, he asked me to attend the theatre with 5 or 6 ladies, and they must pay and sit in the boxes. Is that not shocking? And he has asked me to pay for repairs upon the trapdoor that is in the middle of the stage. It is a wonderful thing ghosts pop in and out of, and many other fantastical stage delights. Into my ear he poured complaints that the actors might fall through the trapdoor's boards as they strode across the stage, or if they were to emerge from the trapdoor, they would be conked on the head because the door flipped about. He begged to show me. I was aghast. R.B. wanted me to go to the theatre with him and gaze upon a broken trapdoor. Oh, blood! I speak harshly, yet this noddy is only foolishness and folly. And in truth, I come to find love makes an idiot of me.
Noddy! How now, Tudor Files? I'm Gage.
I'm Jessica.
And we're here with Philadelphia Carrie for Tudor Word of the Week.
Don't miss a word and listen to the Tudor Time Machine Story Project. So diverting. And I pray you, tell a ningle and ring the little YouTube bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Tudor Files, thank you for listening. Every one of you has the wit of Rosalind and the heart of Cordelia.
And don't be shy about writing to Philadelphia on YouTube or suggesting words, because we love, love, love hearing from our listeners.
And how do you spell our Tudor Word of the Week, Philadelphia?
It is spelled N-O-D-D-I-E.
And it is an insult. So Philadelphia was using it correctly.
She called Richard Burbage a noddy, which is pretty much calling him an idiot or stupid.
It's hard to be nice when you're winding it down with someone.
I comport myself extremely well. No one could know how I suffer. And yet how? How? He should listen to my every word. He should be grateful I gave him mine. He should grovel and fawn that I, a lady of such lofty height, have cast my eye his way. Why does he not? Oh, he is a boggler, a miscreant. Burbage hath more hair than wit, and more faults than hairs.
Oh, my, an insult from two gentlemen of Verona. But Philadelphia, come on. He's so talented. You love the theater. That drew you to him. But then, of course, the theater takes up a lot of his time. He can't spend his whole life being your arm candy.
I love the theater no longer. I have turned my mind to poetry. It has true depth. And poetry by a woman speaks to my woman's heart.
Huh. Who is it?
Mistress Isabel Whitney.
Isabel Whitney? I don't even know her.
I didn't either, until Philadelphia told us about her. So she was born around 1547, and she is usually recognized as the first woman in England to publish a secular poem in her own name. Who knew? We've never heard of her.
I feel like I should have heard of her. She must have been a very unconventional thinker and person.
She was, but like many unconventional women of this period, she was in and out of trouble. She was gentry. technically, but her family didn't have money. She worked in a household but lost the position, and she ended up back at her father's house. And court records show he was fined because both of his daughters were unmarried and pregnant.
They fined her father because they were pregnant, not perhaps the men involved. I mean, the whole thing seems, it is like, bad dad, we're fining you because you're, I don't know, it's just too crazy.
Yeah, I'm just telling you what happened. You know, I guess technically because they weren't married, I mean, we talked about this before, but you know, if you weren't married, you were your father's property. So I guess they fined their father because they couldn't fine the other men. It's all very disturbing and bizarre. Thank God we don't do things like that anymore. But anyway.
Was that kind of the, in, not the end of the road, but sort of where her life idled? Because she wasn't married. She had a child. She's living at her father's.
It kind of shows you that if you were gentry, you could kind of rise from things, of course, because there are records that the baby was baptized, but then nothing further about the baby. But she actually married a doctor around 1580, and she had two children with him that lived into adulthood. So I guess she kind of had a second go-round.
I'm surprised. Usually stories about unwed mothers don't end that well, so good for her.
Oh, what care I for her domestic life? She was a witty poet, and she wrote of love and makes mockery of legal documents. She makes me laugh.
Well, she did write the poem our word of the week is in.
It is called A Sweet Nosegay, or Pleasant Poesy Containing 110 Philosophical Flowers. Is it not a marvelous name? Does it not make you forget all troubles?
I really like it, and I like containing 110 philosophical flowers. I want some philosophical flowers. What do you think the flowers are pondering?
It is a marvelous poem. Those strokes which mates in mirth do give do seem to be but light, although sometime they leave a sign seems grievous to the sight. He that is void of any friend, him company to keep, walks in a world of wilderness, full fraught with dangers deep. Each lover knoweth what he likes, and what he doth desire, but seld or never doth he know what thing he should require. Affection fond deceives the wise, and love makes men such noddies, that to their selves they seem as dead, yet live in other bodies. Ask nothing of thy neighbour that thou wouldst not let him have, nor say him nay of that which thou wouldst get if thou didst crave. Two eyes, two ears, and but one tongue, Dame Nature hath us framed, that we might see and hear much more than should with tongue be named. Seek not each man to please, for that is more than God bids do. Please thou the best, and never care what wicked say thereto. She's so wise. Seek not each man to please. So wise.
Personally, I like two eyes, two ears, and but one tongue. Dame Nature hath us framed.
I think we've taken that idea and made it into the much less poetic expression, don't talk so much. Two ears, one mouth.
Then is now. Kids are always being told, two ears, one mouth, two ears, one mouth. But you know, I'm going to read more of Isabel Whitney's poetry. Thank you for introducing her, Philadelphia.
Oh, Ningle Gage, do we not all need poetry to slip into now and then when the object of affection turns out to be a noddy non parallèle?
So give heed, Tudorphiles. Add some 16th century sauce to your vocabulary with noddy. Listen in next time. Don't miss a word. And don't be a noddy. Subscribe on YouTube and give me a like.